Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Silliman. Thank you for joining me on my show today, What Women Must Know. It's wonderful to have you with me because we have another fascinating conversation that we will be sharing with you this hour. I also want to remind everyone that I will be returning to New York City on May 9th. I do a class twice a year at the Natural Gourmet School. It's a wonderful afternoon. It's from 2 to 5 p.m. And during that class, we will be exploring everything you need to know to get your hormones back on track. So whatever issue you may be challenged with, whether it's PMS, infertility, you know, the discomfort of menopause, the hot flashes and night sweats, whether you're dealing with autoimmunity issues like Hashimoto's, whether you are finding yourself exhausted, depressed, anxious, having insomnia, whatever it is, trust me, you will find pieces of your healing puzzle there. So it's a great class. We only have a small number, so it's really intimate. And if you'd like to really get empowered with truthful information so you can heal and regain hormonal balance, then come along. It's a wonderful afternoon. It's a lot of fun. So that is May 10th. It's at the Natural Gourmet School on 48 West 21st Street. So all of you listening within this metropolitan area, come along, and I promise you it will be quite an enlightening afternoon together. So I'm looking forward, as always, to get back into the Big Apple and share some of the new and exciting information that I have been uncovering and researching in the last several months. So there you go, May 10th, the Natural Gourmet School. Check it out, come along, and most of all, it'd be great to meet a lot of my listeners in person. That's always a treat and a delight for me. So look forward to seeing some of you there, May 10th, the Natural Gourmet School. And I just celebrated my birthday this week, so that was really fun because, to me, birthdays are about getting younger, stronger, healthier, wiser. I really like that. And today we're going to be talking about how important it is, the way we choose to look at things, the way we choose to express and communicate things, in relationship to our genes. Did you know that just by languaging differently, you are directly impacting how your genes are expressed? Now, I find this an absolutely fascinating topic, and I trust you will as well. So the topic today is how to alter our genes, and my guest is Dr. Dawson Church, who is the author of a fantastic best-selling book called The Genie in Your Genes. Here's a little bit about Dr. Church. He is an award-winning author whose best-selling book, The Genie in Your Genes, has been hailed by reviewers as a breakthrough in our understanding of the link between emotions and genetics. He founded the National Institute for Integrative Healthcare to study and implement promising evidence-based psychological and medical techniques. His groundbreaking research has been published in prestigious scientific journals. He is the editor of Energy Psychology, Theory, Research, and Treatment, a peer-reviewed professional journal. He shares how to apply these breakthroughs to health and athletic performance through EFT University, one of the largest alternative medicine sites on the web. So we have lots to explore, lots of things that actually you will be able to personally benefit from as you learn how you can switch your genes on and off appropriately. And never ask how old you are. You want to ask how young you are, because just by languaging, your genes are responding. Isn't that right, Dawson?
You know, it's amazing. And I want to underscore what you said, Cheryl, that when you use these kinds of techniques, it affects everything, every single organ system in your body. And so whether you have depression, anxiety, diabetes, you mentioned all these other conditions, when you start to do these simple lifestyle interventions to reduce your emotional triggering, to improve your mood, to encourage your spiritual life, they actually have a pervasive effect throughout the genome, and we'll get more into that as we go along. But yeah, I just want to underscore what you said about when you do these things, they really affect you positively in a whole variety of ways.
Well, we have so much to talk about. As you probably can tell, I love this subject. I'm inspired by it. I have been researching it and writing about it in my own way and lecturing about epigenetics and nutrigenomics. So I find this absolutely liberating information for all of us, because we can really embrace the reality that we can influence our genetic destiny. And that is the greatest power we have. So I thought in our conversation today, people hear the term genes all the time, and there's lots of news reports and articles coming out about genes and epigenetics and the impact of genes. But I thought we would probably do best by starting at the very beginning, so people can understand these concepts that often are not totally understood. So how about if we start there?
You're right, because there are these news reports, and what they lack is context. So you'll hear some reports saying, I'll give you one really strong example. There was a headline recently, and it said, "Does your spouse have the cheating gene?" Now, that's just a crazy idea, there's a gene for this and that. But because we find genes linked to things, we assume that those genes are causative. And so, for example, there are genes called oncogenes or cancer genes. And so those genes are more expressed. They're dialed up, if you will. The levels of expression are higher in people with certain kinds of cancer. But that doesn't mean that gene necessarily causes that cancer. So you'll find that people who do certain things will have the gene for cancer, and that gene will be turned off, won't be expressed, will be silenced even. So there is this pervasive sort of cultural myth that grew up in the that our genes are deterministic, that they determine not only just our physical characteristics like height and eye color, but they determine all kinds of emotional, moral, spiritual characteristics as well. And what scientists have now really come to the consensus around is that only about 15% of our genome is fixed in that way. The other 85% of it is malleable. It shifts in response to our thoughts, our feelings, our beliefs, our moods, all of those things. And it's a dynamic set of instructions that's being changed all the time, based largely on the contents of our consciousness.
Well, good, because I really want people to understand this, because far from some, esoteric science that's out there, this is something that actually impacts each one of us, and we individually in our lives and collectively can have an impact on how our genes are expressed, which determine how our whole body works, or the instructions. Okay, I have a question for you. So can you make some distinctions between chromosomes, genes, and DNA?
Sure. Chromosomes are the accumulations of DNA molecules that have the instructions in each of those molecules for how to build a protein. Aside from water, our bodies are composed of proteins, and there are about 100,000 proteins, lots of proteins. They're huge, big, complex molecules. Protein may consist of hundreds of different elements, maybe charged with electrical charges at different parts along its length, and those charges make the protein molecule fold. So these are really big, rich, complex molecules, and to make them, our body needs a set of instructions. And those instructions, those blueprints of how to make proteins, are found in the DNA. And a chromosome is just a collection of those DNA molecules. And so we are able to make those 100,000 proteins by using the combination of those instructions, and we assemble those elements then using those DNA instructions, and then those elements go and do useful things in our body, like respiration, circulation, brain function. The whole of our anatomy and physiology is driven by those proteins. So our chromosomes contain the DNA molecules arranged in lengths of DNA called genes that give our body the instructions on how to make these proteins.
I came across a figure that said if we unravel all the DNA, which are tightly wound up, you know, all the DNA and all the chromosomes and all the DNA and the genes in the chromosomes, if we unravel it all throughout all, you know, in all our cells, it would stretch to Pluto. Pluto. I mean, it's billions and billions of miles. That's like an awesome thought.
Yeah, it's a lot of information in a very, very compact space. And, you know, nature invented the gene. Mother Nature has kept the gene around. And it's just a phenomenal information storage capacity. But simple organisms, like some very simple one-celled organisms, actually don't even have a nucleus to their cell, let alone genes and chromosomes, we know them. And yet they're able to do all kinds of fairly complex tasks, which has led to the understanding that these instructions are coming from somewhere else. They aren't coming from inside the DNA. They're coming from outside the DNA in a variety of ways. And that's the science of epigenetics, which is now a much studied branch, new branch of science.
And that's what I want us to talk about, because the theory that existed initially was that this DNA is fixed. You get what you get. The roll of the dice has given you your DNA. And, you know, good luck or bad luck, as the case may be, but that's the end of the story. And that is so far from the end of the story for all of us.
And that is the theory of genetic determinism. And it was embraced by Sir Francis Crick, who, with Watson, was one of the two co-discoverers of the double helix structure of DNA. And that theory of genetic determinism was really embraced wholesale by the media and by science after World War II. And even in his last book, Crick said that everything about you, your habits, your personality, your thoughts, your aspirations, your imagination, everything is the result of signals encoded in your genes. So that was sort of the ultimate extension of the theory of genetic determinism. It's all determined by your genes. And it's just a completely discredited theory at this point. We now understand that there are all kinds of things affecting us from outside the genome, even outside the body, that are actually determining which genes are turned on, which genes are turned off, and to what extent.
So from this knowledge, we then begin to understand a lot more about the influences that can alter our gene expression. And this is such a big message. I just really want to, you know, have neon lights blinking and have everyone, you know, listen to this and understand how profound this new revelation is about the role of epigenetics, this level of control of the genes that is outside the normal structure. Is that where it's I mean, the term epigenetics means above the genes. Is it literally another field around the genes?
I'll give you a really practical example, okay? Just imagine that yesterday you got home from work really tired at, say, 8 o'clock at night. You were depleted, emotionally depleted. You were exasperated by problems at work. And your spouse and you had a fight, and the fight lasted for maybe 5 minutes. So you had an escalation of negative emotion. You got mad at each other. You wind up screaming and yelling at each other, and pretty much being silent the rest of the night. Okay, so you have this event that happened, disagreement, a marital conflict that lasted about 5 minutes. What happened in your genome at that point is very interesting. What happened is that because you were stressed, because you had heightened levels of stress hormones in your blood, those stress hormones were created by the genes that code for hormones like cortisol and adrenaline. Okay, so you've had a spike in your cortisol and adrenaline levels. But, you know, you go to bed, you relax, you wake up eating fine the next day. So you've had this temporary spike in gene expression relative to the genes required to build cortisol and adrenaline for just a few minutes, and then it went back down to baseline. So you've had this event, this bad event, this bad experience, the fight with your spouse that drove your cortisol high based on the gene expression for that hormone. Okay, so that's an actual event happening outside the body. It's not happening inside the body. It's happening out there with somebody else, but it's being translated by the body into messenger molecules like serotonin and dopamine, hormones, all of these things are shifting inside the body, they're changing, and the genes that code for those neurotransmitters and hormones are changing in response to the fight. So that's an example of an external event that causes internal epigenetic signals that then result in the production of hormones. Now, that's an example of an external event, and the external event could be a fight with the boss, could be a fender bender, could be a fight with your kids, could be any kind of number of things. Now think about the next day. The fight with your spouse happened in a 5-minute window last night, but now on the train on the way to work, you're ruminating about the fight with your spouse. You're thinking about the things you wish you had said, you know, because fights are like that. About a day later, we get smart again. We think, you know, if only I'd made that point better, I would have convinced her or him. So we're feeling bad. We're recreating the scene in our mind. We're regretting saying some of the things we said. We're wishing we said things we didn't say. We're remembering the hurtful words they said in response. Now what's happening is there's no external epigenetic signal coming into our bodies. There's no external stressor. We aren't really in a fight or flight situation. There's no tiger in the room. There is no auto accident happening. We're not in combat. But our minds are vividly recreating the circumstances of our distress. When we do that, we build up, we ramp up these negative emotions as though the fight were really happening, and our bodies can't tell the difference. So they now are getting that same epigenetic signal to make lots of stress hormones. Those genes, which are in your adrenal cortex, then are getting expressed, and you then have this flood of adrenaline and cortisol going through your body, even though the event happened 12 hours ago. And then you think about it again at lunchtime. You're bothered by it on the train right on the way home. So you've now spent 12 hours ruminating about this and driving your levels of stress hormones high over an event that lasted 5 minutes. And that is the practical effect of epigenetics in our body. It's a good thing. It's okay. It's appropriate if you have to run from the tiger or swerve to evade another vehicle on the highway. It's really counterproductive for you if you're doing it in response to fairly benign events like encounters with your spouse, and it's certainly really harmful to your body if you keep on replaying those scenes over and over again when there's absolutely no threat to your survival. You are coding for those stress hormones as though there was a tiger in the room when in fact you're totally safe. And so that's sort of I'm trying to cover, you know, one book's worth of ground here, Cheryl, in 5 minutes.
<know. laughs>
But that's what epigenetics looks like in human experience.
So the fascinating thing is that, and the way that I have read about this is like the belief about the genes and the gene mutation that supposedly creates a lot of certain illnesses actually occurs very rarely. And this field of epigenetics, this level above the normal understanding of the genes, is like the software. So the structure of the gene, that, you know, in a mutated gene, there can be breaks, there can be missing pieces, but basically it's like the hardware. And this new emerging understanding of how the blueprint works that creates our bodies and impacts everything about how we function and gives the instructions is the software. And that software is much more profound than the old model of how genes work, because the software can be altered, as you were saying, through emotions, through thoughts, through environmental influences, and through the diet. And the most profound learning that I received by investigating this whole world of epigenetics is that we are talking to our genes every single moment of every day, and our genes are responding and talking back to us. We are in this fluid, dynamic conversation with our genes where everything that we are doing, thinking, saying, eating is impacting how these genes are expressed, either to our benefit or to our detriment.
Is that true? That analogy of the hardware and software is really good, because you have those genes, but whether they're expressed or not has to do with the software instructions you give them. So the genes are there, but whether or not they're active has to do with the stimuli, the software the coding that you're giving them, telling them what to do.
So it's such a responsibility. You know, I have a background in psychotherapy, and I've worked with mind-body approaches to psychotherapy, so we know the impact of emotions and how our body can be flooded with emotions and the neurochemicals that impact how we physiologically function. But this goes deeper, doesn't it? This is another level of influence on creating our bodies and how they function, how they age, how they heal, everything.
Definitely how they age. In a recent study by Elizabeth Blackburn, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering this molecule called telomerase, these are like the, if you think about a zipper, and a strand of DNA looks a bit like a zipper, and when it creates a new protein, it actually unzips, and there are these terminator molecules, like little stoppers on the end of a zipper, that stop the DNA from unraveling completely, and those are called telomeres, and this molecule is called telomerase. And they found that people who repeatedly stress themselves actually shorten that that strand of telomerase on the end of their chromosomes. And why this is important is that telomerase is the most common, is the most reliable marker of aging. And you can have people shortening their telomeres quite quickly through stress or quite slowly if they've learned to relax through using things like meditation, using EFT, which I teach, tapping, using things like the relaxation response that Herb Benson at Harvard teaches. Any of these things will shift those patterns of expression. And so after a while, this has a pervasive effect on your body. It affects every body system, and it affects your longevity. One study found that women who were pessimistic, who had a pessimistic style, their difference in lifespan between those women and optimistic women was between 7 and 15 years. So huge differences in telomeres, in lifespan, and health span based on these epigenetic influences that we incur as a result of stress and our skill at relieving our stress.
So I have a question, because in your book, I read a statement that I hadn't heard of before that really fascinated me. When it comes to cancer cells, we know that sugar is a huge inducer of cancer, because cancer cells have 10 to 16 times more receptor sites for insulin on that cancer cell. But in your book, you also stated that there are receptor sites for adrenaline on cancer cells.
This is a very recent discovery. It was made early this century, and it was a shocker. So adrenaline is literally, when you have high adrenaline, high stress hormones, you're literally feeding cancer cells. They are literally being nourished by those high levels of cancer. And finding those receptors on the outside of these cancer cells for adrenaline was a really big discovery. So what you find with cancer patients is that you typically have low levels of DHEA. Now, DHEA is your main cell repair hormone, so DNA does things like keeps your skin supple. If you have plenty of DHEA, then your skin is, and the term is, the jargon, but is skin elasticity. It stays supple. If you have high levels of cortisol, you deplete your DHEA, and then your skin wrinkles and ages much, much faster. High levels of cortisol also result in decreased muscle mass, decreased bone mass, decreased bone density, an inability to turn short-term into long-term memories. There are a whole bunch of ill effects from high cortisol, because what our bodies need to make cortisol is the same two precursors, the same two hormonal precursors as are required to make DHEA. So when you stress yourself, when you get stressed and don't do something like meditation, like mindfulness, like EFT to reduce that stress, then your body actually is cannibalizing your DHEA. It's cannibalizing your rejuvenation hormone to build cortisol. But when you relax, when you do EFT tapping, when you do meditation, just the opposite effect occurs. You then start to disassemble these big complex cortisol molecules, and your body does this in about 5 minutes. It doesn't take long. So sit quietly after the fight with your spouse, and you'll find in about 20 minutes all that cortisol in your bloodstream goes away, and those two precursors that are available to make DHEA. So every moment we are telling our body the ratio of DHEA and cortisol to make. And we're telling it that by our degree of stress. When we're stressed, we're saying shut down production of DHEA, tear up all your cell repair hormones, and make cortisol out of them. When we're relaxed, the opposite epigenetic signal goes to our bodies. And what we then say to our bodies, we're telling our bodies when we de-stress, is tear apart those big complex cortisol molecules into those two precursors, and then out of those two precursors, make lots of DHEA. And so what you really want to be doing is you want to be de-stressing yourself, because that is what really helps with all these aging factors related to DHEA and cortisol.
That is so profound, because it's not just about, you know, supporting the physiological functions that occur the more we relax, but it's now going down and impacting on that genomic level. We are directly affecting how our genes are expressing. And the important message about that piece to me, and I'd like you just to share a little bit about it, is that the changes that are affected by the emotional states that we are experiencing can be passed on to future generations.
Now, that is a very neat piece of research, and that was actually not expected. We found now in both animal studies and also in human studies that when you change the configuration of certain stress genes in one generation, even though the next generation is born with a fresh slate, as it were, that those epigenetic influences do get passed on to the next generation. And I think in mice, we've now studied this in six generations, in human beings, three generations, so grandmothers, mothers, and granddaughters. So it's powerful, and you are not only carrying genetic instructions from your past and your ancestors, you're carrying epigenetic instructions, including the way you handle stress. So yeah, these things do pass from generation to generation. And on the upside, if you say, for example, you come from a family that is, for want of a better word, full of drama, and you have a bunch of people full of drama in your background, and so you naturally have been entrained in the production of all of those stress hormones by the environment you grew up in. You learned how to have high cortisol. Maybe you had a violent family, an angry family, a neglectful family. So you grew up in an environment where you needed high cortisol. You needed that to escape. I know I teach a lot of live workshops each year, and one woman at the last workshop said, I was working with her on her stress, she said, when my mother drove up after work, drove to the house, and I heard the garage door open, I would run and hide. That was her signal as a six-year-old to run and hide, because she knew that there was going to be screaming and violence and emotional drama right up to her mom got back. So she's then learning as a six-year-old, have high cortisol. High cortisol is good for you. High cortisol helps you escape. The expression of all those genes really helps you stay safe. So she gets this embedded not just in her mind, but in her gene expression. This is like part of her fundamental biological reality. And so she then carries that through to her adult life, to her marriage, to her kids, to her career, and she may have completely inappropriate levels of stress hormones circulating in her body that she doesn't need nearly that. Now she's a college professor, she's making $100,000 a year, she has a stable life, but she's stuck on this high stress level, high cortisol level, and more we're coming to see behaviors like repeated involvement in abusive relationships, addictions, things like that, as an addiction to high cortisol. The person is addicted to their own high levels of cortisol. They got stuck in that biological set point at an early stage of life when it was useful to them, and they've never learned to relax properly. And many of us are like that. We're living with much higher levels of stress than any kind of objective physical threat would suggest we need.
And I just want to tie that back to the previous point we talked about, which is the relationship of cortisol or adrenaline on receptor sites of cancer cells. So the more we operate with the stress response, which is even altering the genes and how genes are coded and making these high levels of hormones, due to the message we're giving them, they're not appropriate. but how this can be a driver for these chronic illnesses such as cancer.
Yes, and also autoimmune diseases. Autoimmune diseases is where the body's attacking itself. Why would it do that, you know? And a large part of the answer is stress. Stress just dysregulates many different systems. And I have, in one of my presentations at our live workshops that I give often, I take the I take two sets of images. One is images of identical twins. So these are two babies born with exactly the same genome because, of course, the egg split when it was just one cell. So you have two babies born that are so identical that when they're born, when they're 3, when they're 4 years old, you can't even tell them apart. So I show faces of twins, and they look so alike you can't tell them apart. But by the time they're maybe 10, 12, 15, they look a little bit different. By the time they're 20, they look more different. By the time they're 25 or 30, they can look very different. And there are studies of twins where one twin got really stressed and the other didn't. And I then put up some slides of people like that. And by the age of 50, one of them looks 40 biologically, and one of them looks 60 biologically, even though they were born with the same genes. And it's because of the epigenetic effects of stress. In one study of Vietnam veterans, they looked at veterans of Vietnam who had an identical twin brother, and they then compared the brain functioning of the two twins. And you think, again, these were identical. They should have exactly the same brain functioning, and they didn't. They found that the brains of the ones that went to Vietnam were substantially different from the ones that didn't go to Vietnam. And so we're changing our genome, we're changing our levels of those stress hormones, we're changing our neurobiology based purely on stress.
That's so interesting. And it just reinforces to me how important it is to commit to strategies in one's life, to diffuse emotional triggers, to put into your daily routine meditations, yoga, walking outside in nature, whatever allows us to stay centered, because everything is affecting everything, you know. And we have to make the best choices, because it can go either way, right? We can affect things adversely, or we can affect things in a positive way. It is our power and our choice. That's the ultimate.
It really is. In fact, in one study done by Herb Benson at Harvard, who I mentioned earlier, he taught people the relaxation response, and he studied their entire genome, all 24,000 genes, before and after 6 weeks of learning the relaxation response. And he found that in just 6 weeks that 1,500 genes had changed their patterns of expression based just on learning to relax. So, yeah,
wow.
Whatever you do, you are, if you do positive things, you are having a profound effect on potentially on your genome and your whole body and your health span and your lifespan, like those differences between pessimists and optimists I describe later on. As you age, it's cumulative. So if you aren't taking care of yourself, if you're stressed, and no matter, even if you're doing everything else right in your life, if you allow stress to linger, then it will come back to bite you later on. In one study done by Kaiser Permanente, a huge study of 14,000 adults, they high levels of childhood stress that they hadn't addressed, so they had a lot of childhood chaos in their lives. They had higher rates of cancer, high rates of heart disease, higher rates of suicide attempts, higher rates of diabetes, hepatitis, all kinds of problems as a sequel to that chaotic childhood. So it is so worthwhile taking control of your life, learning things like EFT. I just published a new book called The EFT Manual, and in that I give instructions for what I think is the quickest single stress relaxation technique, EFT. EFT is great, meditation is great. Any of these things that you use really can affect both your health and your longevity.
Well, we are about to take a break, Dawson, but when we come back, we're going to be talking about emotional freedom technique. I know that you are very passionate about this technique. Maybe we can even demonstrate a little bit while we're having our conversation and give people more access to the tools that will support everything we've been talking about, how to optimize your gene expression for our health and ultimately longevity. So this is a good time. Take a break. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And today we are having this fascinating conversation with Dr. Dawson Church. He is the author of The Genie in Your Genes and many other books as well. Today we are carrying on the most fascinating conversation with Dr. Dawson Church. He's a PhD. He's an award-winning author. And the book that we're talking about today is The Genie in Your Genes, although he has authored many award-winning books. And he is so accomplished in so many areas. It's such a delight to have him with us today. So, gosh, there's so much we can talk about, Dawson. I want to ask you a very basic question. Why did you write this book, The Genie in Your Genes?
I was very struck by what I was hearing at professional conferences, and this is going back. I wrote the first edition in, I think, 2003, 2004, and so I would hear from practitioners doing energy medicine, energy psychology, similar fields at those kinds of conferences, integrative medicine conferences. Then I'd read stuff or hear from people in the epigenetic field, but no one was putting together the link between emotion and gene expression, and also the potential of these new therapies to potentially affect gene expression. So I was astonished that no one had written the book before me, honestly, because all the research was public domain, was all out there. Just nobody had ever connected the dots. And so in that book, I simply connect the dots between emotion, gene expression, and these new therapies. And so I found it really interesting. I knew, you know, that just writing the book would catalyze a lot of interest in this field. And now we're starting to see the first batch of studies showing how emotions are really tied up with epigenetics. So there's now a lot of research. In 2004, I predicted there would be research showing this, but I could not point to any. Now, many years later, I can point to literally dozens of studies that show the link between gene expression and emotion. So I was just intellectually curious about how this could happen. And then after that, I went more and more from being an observer to being an advocate. And I said, we've got to get the stuff into primary care. We've got to get the stuff to veterans who are suffering from PTSD. So I started the Veteran Stress Project, where we now have thousands and thousands of veterans get these effective treatments. I've helped congressmen draft letters advocating for these treatments. I've actually testified twice on Capitol Hill. I've really put a lot of energy behind advocacy. So I'm not just an objective observer standing by and saying, it would be nice if people could heal this way. I'm saying I need to do everything I can to draw attention to this and actively help people heal this way.
Well, the thing that I'm so impressed about with you, Dawson, is you initiate things. You make things happen. You create these institutes and these programs and the research. It's I'm so impressed by getting into action and spreading the wisdom and the practical tools. I want us to talk about the EFT technique. I know you're really involved with it. You have a website, theeftuniverse.com. This is one of the primary tools you use in your work, and this is a critical tool for people practicing energy medicine. But before I go there, I just have to ask you more about this role of collagen that you write about, because I found this to be so fascinating, and I just want you to share it with my listeners, because I know they will find it really fascinating as well.
Well, I have a whole chapter in Genie in Your Genes. By the way, the book is not available right now. It's between the second and third editions, so the third edition will be available in about a month. But it's not available anywhere right now. I just can't find any at the moment. But I have a whole chapter in that book on collagen, because collagen is like a liquid crystal. It's like a crystal latticework in our whole body. And one of the sort of trick questions that sometimes is asked in biology classes is, what's the largest organ in the human body? And the usual answer is the skin. And that's actually not correct. The largest organ is the connective tissue body. And this connective tissue, this collagenous tissue, causes our joints, our ligaments, but it's also around all of our organs. There are these collagenous sheaths around all of our organs, so it's pervasive throughout the body. And what happens is when you send a signal through the collagen, and these are wave signals that travel through the collagen, it's like going through a liquid crystal. So it is highly conductive. It's a highly conductive tissue. It's a highly regular array of molecules, and it conducts signals really, really, really well. So there are ways in which the connective tissue is traveling, is pervasive through our body, and signals travel through it down into the cells. Like, I have one illustration drawn from a biologist friend of mine in the book, and it shows how collagen actually can link right into the nucleus of a cell through the cell wall and into the whole connective tissue body. So it is something that is literally holding us together. And when we do EFT on the other therapies, we're actually deliberately stimulating that collagenous body and sending deliberate signals through it to soothe us and help us relax.
So it is like it's a crystal matrix that actually is a communication channel through our entire body.
Yeah, and there are lots of communication channels. We don't have just one. It's not like the nervous system is the only way our bodies communicate. We also have the endocrine system. So through our hormones, these are, if you trigger the expression of the genes that code for cortisol and adrenaline, you have a flood of those within 2 or 3 seconds, okay? So these are really, really fast messenger molecules. Molecules like serotonin and dopamine, same thing. They're pervasive. They can travel really quickly. So we have all these signaling systems. Even light, we have things called biophotons in our bodies, and cells emit biophotons. So these little packages of light that are traveling through our body, communicating, helping ourselves communicate. There are energy fields through which our DNA strands can align and communicate. So there are energy fields that are part of the equation, and obviously if you get an MRI or an EEG at a hospital, they're measuring your energy body, and that's a potent way of transmitting information really quickly. And it's about 100 times more efficient and faster than the nervous system. So we have all these multiple ways in which our whole body is processing these signals every single millisecond. So we are integral beings, and it's not like something happens in your ankle and your shoulder doesn't know, or something happens in your emotional life and your gut doesn't know. All of these parts of us are intimately linked together.
Well, let's talk about the role of EFT and why you are so passionate about it, and how this energy psychology, energy, medicine, however you want to define it, technique, actually plays a major role in supporting us in optimal gene expression.
I'd be happy to, and there are lots of studies on the website. So if you go to EFTUniverse.com, you'll find over 5,000 case histories, people talking about everything from using it for diabetes to menstrual cramps to migraine headaches to chronic pain, of course, psychological problems like anxiety and depression. And there are over 50 studies of EFT now as well. So there's a lot of research on all of these issues, and it shows that it alleviates most kinds of stress-based problems really, really, really fast. Like phobias, the research shows it takes care of phobias usually in one session, one brief session. It can take care of things like anxiety, performance anxiety, usually in one session. So it's really, really quick. Things like PTSD are really serious diseases, and PTSD takes 6 to 10 sessions to resolve. But even then, for this really, really, really tough problem of PTSD, the research shows EFT is very effective. And I'll give you a little snippet.
Let's define EFT, because there are a lot of people who probably would like to know more about what it is.
Sure. What it is it's a combination of two flavors of psychotherapy. One is exposure therapy, where you think about the problem and focus on the problem. The other is cognitive therapy, where you use your thoughts to change your reality, to change your thinking, your cognitive frame around the problem. And then it also brings in acupressure in the form of stimulating your acupressure points with your fingertips. So you tap or rub or press on these 12 acupressure points, and those calm you while you're doing the exposure and cognitive pieces of EFT. And there are 12 of these points, And we actually have a free download of the EFT mini manual for anyone to just download for free and use it. Try EFT at the website DawsonGift.com. So if you log on to DawsonGift.com, it's my name, DawsonGift.com. We'll email you a free copy of the EFT mini manual. You can try it yourself. But essentially, EFT combines cognitive therapies, exposure, and the stimulation of these 12 acupoints, and that really calms people fast. So research shows that people who are anxious calm down quickly. People who are depressed recover fast. People with PTSD get over those traumatic memories quickly with EFT.
So this is a technique that is simple to do. It is quick in its results and can result in permanent changes.
That's the really encouraging thing. One example, we do a lot of work with veterans, and we have a whole nonprofit called the Veteran Stress Project, where we have helped thousands of veterans to recover from PTSD. But one example was a veteran who'd been haunted by this memory since the Vietnam War, like for 35 years. His best friend was killed in the Vietnam War. And so for years, he's had a lot of anger and guilt around his best friend being killed by a sniper. And what had happened that day was he and his best friend used to go on patrol in Vietnam every day, and he was always on the right, his best friend was on the left. And the day his friend got killed, they switched positions. They switched their positions. So he was on the left, his friend was on the right, and so his story since Vietnam, 35 years, is the bullet was meant for me. And he took it. So he's got all this guilt, all this anger, all this shame, all this blame, and it's really exacting a toll on his mental health and physical health. So he's had this memory for a long, 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 long time, a lot of emotional baggage attached to it. We did EFT with him just one time, just once, while he remembered this memory, and he suddenly said, you know, I realize the bullet was meant for me, but just the way I would have died for him, he would have died for me. And so he had this complete shift in the cognitive frame through which he saw his friend's death in Vietnam and completely lifted that burden of guilt from him permanently. So we'll work on these memories with these veterans memory by memory. We'll have them bring in lists of what ails them. They'll contact us through the Veteran Stress Project website. We'll assign them to an EFT coach or therapist. They'll work on those memories, and memory by memory, they untangle all of that emotional trauma, and they're then at peace. They no longer have those symptoms of PTSD, and they're able to really get their lives back. So it's been that's been one of the most personally satisfying projects, is to work with people. And even if you never had a friend killed, you know, you may have had a bully in school when you were 5 or 6. You may have had a parent who was neglectful or abusive. You may have had an aunt or an uncle or a family member who really caused a lot of grief as a child. So almost all of us have these hidden traumas. And as I mentioned in that Kaiser study, if you don't go back and do EFT or something on those memories, they really affect your health in later life.
And the great thing about this energy psychology, energy medicine, because when I was practicing as a psychotherapist, I was using this type of approach. I was working with modalities that could swiftly, profoundly, quickly change the energy states. And the thing that I love about the EFT work is that it has such a universal appeal. Anyone can do it. It's easy to learn. There are people really dedicated like you that are giving information away for free, like your free 60-page EFT tapping mini manual, which I'm looking at right now. People go to EFTuniverse.com, they can download it, which is making a huge difference. This EFT, emotional freedom technique, has actually gone crazy. It's just exploded as a modality that is being used by so many professionals, by the lay community, all over the place, because it is really producing profound results, simply, easily, quickly, permanently.
Yeah, it has spread quickly. And the reason I picked EFT, I mean, there are lots of other methods. You mentioned, I like EMDR is really effective, and there are several other somatic body-based therapies that are really, really good as well. But I chose EFT to really get behind because it's super quick to learn, and it can be used safely. So EMDR, for example, we recommend that people do it in a therapist's office. And the guidelines for EMDR say, you know, that there's a danger of a client having a big emotional reaction doing it in a therapist's office. With EFT, we now have so many cases showing people can use it even for serious trauma, and it's safe. So that's why it's safe, it's ubiquitous, it's spreading rapidly, and that's why I've really focused on that particular technique. But it's not a be-all and end-all. It's really worth learning meditation. It's worth learning heart coherence. It's worth learning other forms of relaxation. And then putting together a personalized program that works for you. That might be meditation in the morning. It might be yoga once a week. It might be walks in nature, which you mentioned earlier, Cheryl. Whatever your personal plan is for stress reduction, it's up to you. Customize it the way you like. The only mistake you can make is not doing any of it. You know, the only bad exercise is the exercise you don't do. So it's just crucial to find ways of releasing your stress, however you do it. No method is perfect. No method works for everybody. EFT, I found, though, is so easy to learn and so incredibly effective that it's a great starting point.
And it can be used for any thought, any issue, any belief that could be causing you distress.
Well, in our live workshops, for example, I talk a lot about affirmations, and people are affirming things like, my body is perfectly healthy, I'm at my ideal weight, I have abundance of money and all this stuff, but fundamentally they don't believe it, and so the affirmations aren't working. With EFT, we show you how to, and in fact, in the EFT manual, the new edition that just came out, I talk a lot about how to find these hidden goals. So even though you overtly are saying, my body is vibrantly healthy, some part of your subconscious programming is saying, I was a sickly child, whatever it is, whatever negative message you got from an early age, and that is then undermining your intentions. And so in the EFT manual, I go really deep on how to use for intentions and how to remove the blocks to your sports performance, to your performance in your relationships, to your business performance, to your financial performance, even things like stock trading. I have a whole section on how to, you know, trade stocks, but make sure you aren't emotionally triggered, that you do it when you are calm and centered, and you will enhance your ability to make sound investments when you do it that way.
And, you know, we have to tie that back into the topic we started with. The more we can diffuse these stressful conscious and unconscious thoughts, beliefs, and emotional reactions, the more we are supporting and enhancing optimal gene expression. It makes a difference.
Totally.
It's so important.
Yeah. The more we have inner peace, yes.
So we're at the end of our conversation, Dawson. I just want to direct people to the best websites. I know you've got a few of them. Where should we go?
Okay, so for the mini manual, go to DawsonGift.com, DAWSON, DawsonGift.com, and they will get not only the manual but a bunch of videos and other things showing you how to do EFT. So that's a quick way to get the mini manual and other resources too, and it'll lead you to EFT Universe, our main archive of stories. Then if you know any veterans who need help, our website for the nonprofit is stressproject.org. Stressproject.org, that's our clearinghouse where therapists and coaches who are offering EFT are connecting with veterans and vice versa. So that's where you go if you are a veteran, if you have a family member who's a veteran, and you need help. And those are the two main sites I would recommend. And then, of course, if you want to just get the full routine right away, just order the EFT manual off of Amazon, get that in the book, and it'll give you full instructions on how to do all these nuances of EFT.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for the wonderful work you're doing, Dr. Dawson Church. This has been an enlightening conversation. I wish you all the best, and I know you're making a huge difference for people throughout the world.
Well, your classes in New York sound so fabulous. I wish I was there to take them. So,
I wish you were there, too.
Thank you so much.
Next time. Okay, well, thank you for being with us today. And thank all of you. Thank you all for listening. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. And remember, you're asking how young you are, not how old you are. Bye for now.